Oh, here he comes! Minister!
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 How are you? Minister, answer, how's your wife?
Answer the question, Minister!
Counterclockwise, thanks to scoop.co.nz.
Hey, Selwyn.
Yeah, g'day, John. How are you?
I'm all right, and you?
Not too bad.
Lovely, good to hear you again. So, this week, we're going to talk about retrospective legislation.
Imagine the frequency that's putting out, or even worse still, what the politicians put out. They have us all ducking for cover. We have lead-lined umbrellas.
Anyway, so we've obviously had the deal from National where they've come out in the wake of the Uruwera trials and they're being thrown out of court. So tell us what's on your mind.
Yeah, it's a bit of a political news roundup, really. The big issue of the week is really the National Party moving as government to create legislation that is retrospective, that will address the ruling from the Supreme Court that found that police surveillance that went on relating to the Uruwera case, where video surveillance was done on private land, private Māori land, that was deemed to be illegal by the police. So that evidence was found to be inadmissible into the courts and causing obviously a big problem to the Crown cases. We saw the dropping of charges against many. There are still charges remaining against four individuals, including Tama Iti, and the Crown seems to be moving very quickly and requesting that Parliament consider it under urgency to actually address the law to make it legal as opposed to illegal for that video surveillance. So what that means is, right at the moment, the National Party has been counting numbers to see whether or not it can force a retrospective law through Parliament this week to be able to correct what it believes is a bad ruling from the Supreme Court.
Now, if this becomes legislation, and it looks like it's going to, what are the downsides of this for you?
Well, first off, what is happening is it does look like the National Party in government has the numbers to get this retrospective legislation through. It looks like the ACT Party and United Future have come on side. The Māori Party are saying, no way, we're not going there. We don't like this and we're not going to support it. The Labour Party is saying there are aspects to the law, the legislation, that need to kind of be considered, but it needs to be debated carefully and it needs to go to select committee. So it's saying you won't get our support by trying to force it through the actual Parliament through the legislature that fast under urgency. In the Labour Party, encountering the government's move, what the government is saying is it's saying it's not just the Uruwera remaining four that are accused, that it affects their potentially affects their trial. This actually affects this illegal use of video surveillance that the police have been doing on private property. Affects, they say, 40 cases that are pending court and around 50 that are current operations that are underway at the moment. They're saying it's a big deal. They're saying all these kind of cases and ongoing operations involve, including severe and serious kind of crimes, like including murder, serious drug offences, and drug peddling offences against children, etc., etc. So you can see there's a high public interest aspect.
Well, we want
to
those
that.
People caught, don't
now,
we?
Now, what? What they're saying, so we need to tidy this up really fast. Labour Party is saying, oh, well, hang on a minute, the Supreme Court has considered, this illegal use of videotaping. It's saying that it has the ability to actually say, well, the public interest relating to the severity of these cases that it has been used to get evidence on, it overrides the illegalities that the police committed in getting that video surveillance material. So the Labour Party is saying there isn't a sense of urgency around this, that the Supreme Court can tidy up the big stuff up that the legislature or the Parliament and the politicians and the government has done on this, and Parliament can in a sane way debate it and think through the amendments and the legislation without doing a knee-jerk reaction on it, John. So that's pretty much the crux of it. There's another part, though, that is really, really, an interesting thing that no one has kind of started to contemplate here. The retrospective legislation that the government is proposing here, it goes back about a year. It goes back to basically cover the operations that the goes beyond a year, but you know, around the operations that the Uruwera operation focused on. So it means it's there to rope up the mess, going back to make sure that the Crown, the prosecutors, can put that video surveillance material before the courts with Tamariri and his co-defendants. So that raises the question, well, okay, what about all of those other cases where there have been convictions and people are serving time, where video surveillance evidence was a big part of their cases going back who knows how long? Now, this particular ruling from the Supreme Court arguably could lead to a huge amount of counterclaims where you have people that are currently in prison for whatever crimes, wrongfully or rightly convicted of them, applying to the Court of Appeal to have their convictions reconsidered, basically. So that's an aspect that the government hasn't gone near, and certainly even this retrospective legislation would not cover, John.
Yeah, It's all a bit murky, really. It's sort of a murky water. It seems like someone's made an almighty cock-up, really. That's what it sounds like.
Look, this goes back a long way. I mean...
Oh, looks like we've lost Selwyn there. It's pretty unusual. Tell you what I'll do. Oh, Selwyn, you're back.
Yeah.
We lost you there for a second. Yeah, you cut out. Yeah.
I probably said a few words that they didn't like and they cut the transmission since we kind of went wobbling, you know. just to hit on those points, you know, this legislation that the government is proposing, this retrospective legislation, well, it arguably wouldn't affect and solve the problem that many who have already been convicted where that kind of evidence was used illegally. Illegally obtained and used in the court. So, you know, a lot of Court of Appeal kind of appeals can be expected, one would imagine. You know, there's all sorts of twists and tails. Where does it go? Who is to blame? Pointing the fingers around the place. I mean, you could start with the police. I mean, the police just aren't, you know, detectives and plods out there on the beat.
Yeah.
There's a huge legal team that's there. There's a huge prosecution team. They test their evidence, you know, thoroughly so they don't waste their opportunities in court. You would imagine, and I know for a fact, you know, from my own experience in observing these things, that surveillance from you know, all branches of police of people in their private homes has been ongoing for, you know, well over a decade.
Yeah.
Even, you know, the head of Criminal Intelligence Service section, I should say, he said to me in an interview, you know, only a year ago, that it's, you know, such intelligence and such acquiring of information is one of evolution. And he says, you know, at one stage, the cops, we used to sit there in a car up the road or in a bush with a pair of binoculars and observe what was going on. And he says now police officers and police women, police men can actually sit in their police stations in the luxury of an armchair or a comfortable desk chair and observe everything that's going on in someone's private home and gather that evidence in. So this shows you how sophisticated and how much use of private use of videotaping goes on for evidential purposes. This whole thing just puts a red line through the whole thing, really. And, you know, that I think, with those who perhaps are listening and have, you know, doing legal training or have legal experience, it's interesting to see what they think by way of text, John.
Yeah, well, I had a text here, actually, which asks whether the Labour Party knew about the raids and asks who gave the go-ahead. Do you know that, the answer to that?
Well, it'd be interesting. I was over in Tonga at the time when those raids first took place that morning, and Helen Clark was over there. I was covering a Pacific Leaders Forum at the time. She was certainly well briefed before she hit the ground running. She arrived there that morning. It's the kind of thing where the Clark government in particular made a big thing of no surprises, and that message of we will have no surprises went to every operative agency and every ministry and department that the government apparatus had.
Yeah.
So what would have happened there in answering that question is through the police minister's office and through the Prime Minister's office, the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, the police commissioner's office, to be bureaucratic about this, would have sent a message saying this is highly confidential, highly classified, but there's an operation, expect political fallout from this or political attention. These are the salient points and these are the things that concern us. Clark was very, very careful on what she was saying over in Tonga. I remember putting a question to her relating to Tamariri and some of his Pacific kind of movements prior to this, and she just would not answer that and ruled the question not even to be in place in the transcript. transcript of the press conference.
Well, yeah, going back to talking about the Uruwera terror raids and the whole terrorism sort of legislation, if you like. Now, I'm talking from when I was living in England, and you'd often see these terror raids. They'd have a terror raid, and then 6 months down the line, the case would get thrown out of court because there wasn't enough evidence. And it makes me very suspicious. And I was telling you off air that by absolute chance, I know one of the guys from the Uruwera 16. I'm not going to name his name, but he's one of the ones that's got off. He had his passport confiscated from him for 3 years, couldn't work, put incredible tension within his home life, from what I understand. And you know what? I can't for a minute believe that this guy's a terrorist. Maybe I'm naive, but this was one of the gentlest, nicest guys that in the 3 years that I've been, or the nearly 3 years that I've been in New Zealand, that I've met. Just, and yeah. I just can't believe it, to be honest. I'm very skeptical.
That rings true with a lot of stuff that has been presented as evidence. You know, it raised the eyebrows of just about every reasonably minded individual that was observing the proceedings. If we saw, like, some of the transcripts, John, a couple of the accused apparently were having a conversation. The conversation went along the lines of, you know, what if we got a bus and we hoisted it up with a crane or something like that, and dropped it on US President George Bush, you know. It was that kind of thing, you know. And in some ways it's more the conversations that you might have with a degree of jest. You might not like the guy, and so you put that in before a jury, and you package it up and frame it in a particular way, and it might cause some concern. But these are the problems, you know, that you have. A lot of it, other people hold. You know, I mean, this was the subject of the marvellous documentary Operation 8, you know, where it really looked at the other side of all of this and managed to navigate its way through a labyrinth of court suppression orders and information you can't actually say publicly.
Yeah, well look, it's, again, once again, been great talking to yourself. Better crack on with the show, but I look forward to speaking to you again next week, my friend.
Okay, mate.
Have a fantastic week.
You too.
Bye.